Hello and welcome to the Bookends Cafe, a podcast for listeners who have a professional role but a curious and interesting mindset. A podcast for listeners that have a serious job and who have a willingness to hear the opinions of others and make positive change to their life and their job because of those opinions. Or, simply, it's a podcast around leadership and a love of learning, and you can listen to it whilst walking your dog. I'm Judith and my colleague Kelly, and together we are Bookends Leadership, a small but effective boutique coaching and mentoring business for individuals and teams who are either stuck or otherwise needing an injection of new thinking to achieve their personal and business goals. For your listening pleasure, we are delighted to bring to you our podcast, The Bookends Cafe, every Monday, either on into iTunes and onto our website at www.bookendsleadership.com. Working to a theme each session, we discuss books, online material, theory and practice, and we leave you with some takeaways and activities that you can use or not use. But we always start with a recipe. So,
oh my God, I put a bit in my mouth.
Look at that, she's eating. She's cooking. She's eating what she cooked. And actually, she didn't cook it. She bought it, and it's absolutely delicious.
And I put it in the oven. I hated it. It's a spinach and feta phyllo pastry wrap.
Well, there you go. You've had a description of it. I can attest to the fact that it is delicious and it's filled with spinach, which, of course, is very good for you. Remember Popeye?
Yeah.
Those of you who are old enough to remember Popeye and his spinach. And you know what? After all this, you know, recent research on studies, they've actually poo-pooed the fact that Popeye would have been that strong from eating spinach because he wouldn't have been getting enough of any protein. So I'm very disappointed to know that somebody took the time to actually wipe out my love of Popeye's strength from his spinach. Okay,
very
so
good.
Seeing as we have no food because Kelly's hopeless at
what?
We're going to look at a few things today, and our title of our podcast is The Deliciousness of Reflection, Recording and Writing a Diary. Okay, so we're really sort of two elements to it, the reflection and the recording and writing of the diary. And I'm going to start by looking at an article that was by Helen Garner, and some of you may well have read some of her work. She writes regularly for The Monthly, and she wrote an article, and it's called The Insults of Age, A One-Woman Assault on Condescension. And she is reflecting on the fact, now I have to say, I love her style of writing, and that's the biggest attraction to reading anything she writes.
She talks openly about not having her glass full unless she spends an hour a day writing a diary.
Exactly. So she's a prolific,
really yeah,
prolific writer, but she also has worked on that and has a very good style. But in this particular article, it's really interesting because she is talking about being out and about, meeting a friend for a coffee and some food, and goes into a cafe and her and a friend, and they want to sit down, but the first thing that happens is the waiter won't let them sit on the lounge section, the lounge chair section. They have to go and sit at hard tables and chairs. And when she questions that, he says, oh, no, when there's only two of you, you have to sit at a table. The lounges are for bigger groups. Personally, if a waiter had said that to me, I would have walked out. But she persevered and stayed there. So they sat down and the waiter came over with the menus and gave it to them and said, oh, how are you ladies today? How was your shopping? Now, Helen Garner is a 70-year-old woman who works, is a very prolific writer and works pretty well full time. She was highly insulted at being pigeonholed as being an old lady, because she's grey-haired, an old lady, and her colleague was also white-haired, who would be shopping because they wouldn't be doing anything constructive. She absolutely corrected the waiter and put him in his box, and, you know, they carried on and had a nice meal. She told him she had no desire for a conversation with him. He was there to do a job, so could he just do his job and get on with it? So he did. And in the end, she actually did leave him quite a tip because he did respect and work within the bounds that she wanted, which was no talk, efficient and friendly, efficient service, and no comments about, pigeonholing someone just because they're an older-looking woman, that they wouldn't be doing anything constructive.
I think if that waiter had realised that it was Helen Garner, he would have been a little bit more friendly. Mm. For someone who has thousands and thousands of people who follow her monthly blogs,
exactly,
her online presence, and certainly some of the books that she'd written as an Australian author, he should have been a little bit more respectful. But the thing I like about Helen Garner and like people like her is just that commitment that they have to a diary. I'm not someone who's ever been a florid writer. I think I'm more sort of scientific in nature, probably a little bit more I guess, academic. Writing for the sake of writing has been something that I've learned through actually taking what I call a gratitude diary. So taking very much an approach to writing about things that I'm grateful for, as opposed to the things that ad nauseum happen in my day, which is, I know, some narrative writers do. So if you are sort of ever wanting to economise on writing a diary, it is delicious to be able to write things down. But I enjoy sort of having a little black book on the side of my bed, and that's where I'm sort of able to really reflect on what I'm grateful for. Sometimes you end up there with things that you're not so grateful for, and it becomes a little bit of a purge, you know, like a teenage girl sort of purge. I don't like that sort of diary entry method.
Yeah.
But the idea of reflecting on what you're grateful for, on reflecting how you achieved something in the day, the week, the month, I think is a real deliciousness that we should all take the time to do from time to time. But it has to be uniquely personable. And like Helen Garner talks about, uniquely you.
It's funny because I've never been a diary writer per se, but when I was expecting my first child, we went to prenatal classes, and the midwife there advocated keeping a diary at the end, not for the whole 9 months, but in that last 4 weeks, keeping a diary of what you were like, what you felt like, and then having the baby, and then immediately after it. So that's all. So the diary was like 4 weeks. Well, you know what? I did that. And just recently in a house clean out and tidy up, I found this diary.
Wow.
And, you know, it's wonderfully written. I actually can write, although I've always doubted myself, and yet I've been told many times I can write. I write a really good story. But I'm reading this, and it's a fantastic read. And I think at the time I did it because, you know, I was a new mother and I did everything the midwife told me. But, you know, there's a lot of insights into what was happening, not just with my body, but with how I was feeling and what my husband was doing. And I think, you know, it was a good way of getting through it all, because it's not a pleasant experience, and labour is labour, whatever way you look at it. And, I think it did work, and I can understand now why that midwife did it, because it was a way of letting go of all the – because I was really, really scared. I used to – shit scared. Because I didn't know what was going to happen, even though I'd been to the classes. So I think there are great advantages in reading, but there's also, for me, I think great advantages in reading, going back and reading. So going back and reading what you were like even 12 months ago, if you are a really good diary writer, it must be really almost cathartic to look back and say, look, I've gone from that to where I am now. So, you know, life isn't as bad. Life has changed. I've changed. And that must be really, really comforting to see that. So much as I don't write a diary, I do, like you, I do tend to make little scribbles on my bedside table. I've got a pad. And it is interesting to look back and say, oh, look, you know, at that point I wasn't too happy, and yet here I've got over that.
And it helps you think with perspective, you know, what is the worst that could happen? You know, because you really realise when you sort of look through your gratitude journal, the worst that could really happen wasn't so bad after all.
No. Exactly.
But you've got a book.
Yeah, look, interestingly, there's a book by Anne Lamott. It's called Bird by Bird. Interesting title. I'll explain it in a second. But the secondary title is Some Instructions on Writing and Life. And this is a book by an author who is telling you her story of how she teaches people how to write. So she runs classes for new journalists or new people who are considering writing a book. And she goes through how she takes them from woe to go, you know, from the beginning to the end.
Remember in the quest for writing things more simply, you know, we're used to probably growing up in slabs and slabs of reports and pages, but there is an art in writing a 2 or 3 or a 1-page document.
Yeah, it is really good. It's a fantastic read. I didn't think I'd enjoy it because I thought this is really going to be boring. But it's really interesting because she gives such a lot of almost backhanded advice about your life by telling you how you would write it if you had to write it. And I like this example. So a major step in learning is to rely on your intuition, right? So you should always use your intuition and write what you feel and what you think. And she says, and sometimes it's useful to find a metaphor. So she uses broccoli. It's so ridiculous that it works for me. This is a quote from her. Another friend of hers says he uses animals. So my animal thinks this or my animal hates that. So you're not writing I because you can't, but you're using a metaphor. So she uses broccoli, God knows why. But it is really interesting because when you think about it, if something is really difficult for you to write, And you can't write in the first person, so it's not I did or I didn't.
It's too hard
and it's too emotional. Yes.
Ah.
Put it on to something else. So you're actually transferring all that upset or that hurt or that emotion to an inanimate object, and you're able to write clearly about it. And she finds, and she says she does it, she gets some amazing comments in the class about, you know, how dumb it is. But when they do it, they can actually see that writing about something, particularly something really sad.
Yes.
So if you've had, you know, a bereavement or someone you love is really ill, and you've got to tell the story. That's right.
Big sense.
Putting it onto something else just gives you a chance. Now, as she says, these things are not for anybody else to read.
Yeah, right.
These things are for you to get into the frame of a writer.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're not shared, but it allows you to express yourself. So all the way through the book, the different chapters are about the different stages in teaching people how to write, giving examples like that, using metaphors, using language that you wouldn't normally think about, you know, depersonalizing some things but personalizing others. And it really is a good read. So I recommend it as simply, you know, light reading.
Yep.
You'll learn something from it. But if you are a prolific diary writer or you would like to become someone who could write something, this is a good starting point.
Terrific.
Yeah.
I think that's probably a good thing, because if you're not a prolific diary writer or if you're not into slabs of narrative, you know, I find my hands hurt and I get sick of typing. So one thing that we do when we're coaching individuals, particularly if they're needing a reflection or they're needing that time to be able to stop and think, we've created in our toolkit a safe-to-fail experiment methodology. So you have an experimental methodology which helps those more scientific people in the community to state what their problem is or what their hypothesis or their goal needs to be, and then establishing experimental conditions as a goal around that particular hypothesis. Because the way in which we design a safe-to-fail experiment with people we're mentoring or coaching through writing is relatively cheap, doesn't cost too much time or effort. It's relatively pragmatic because it's one-liners. It's certainly very short. And for those of us that don't have those big slabs or big narratives, it's very crisp and very clear. So you might have a goal to do something, and we call that condition A. And then you need to actually put in place an experiment around, if you do B, how will A change? If you do C, how will A change? If you do D, how will A, B or C change? And that safe to fail experiment is very crisp and very clear, and it's certainly very helpful for people who are stuck in trying to establish a way or a method of change when big slabs of text and big deep introversion, which is essentially what a diary does, it's just too hard, either because it's too confronting or because it just takes too much of a labour of love.
Yeah.
Very good. Anything else?
No. It's all for me, so.
Very good. So one thing that I actually wanted to give to you all as listeners, and it's a nice, delicious reflection. We, in our coaching business, do spend time with people, running through, I suppose, their LinkedIn profile, their resume, certainly how they're presenting to their workplace. And there's a thing on LinkedIn called a social selling index. I'm not quite sure whether anyone knows that, but if you, in your LinkedIn brand or even in your web browser, type in www.linkedin.com/sales/SSI, it will directly take you to what it's called your social selling dashboard on LinkedIn. Now, the role on LinkedIn is for you to socially sell yourself to greater than 85%. Across four different matrices. The first one is your professional brand, and that's a score out of 25. On LinkedIn, finding the right people, which is a score out of 25. Engaging with insights, a score out of 25. And building relationships through social selling is a score out of 25. So we do this with individuals who are in our coaching program with the aim to get their LinkedIn profile at or above 85. I think Judith failed in that.
I did.
In that experience. I get a bit close, but it certainly does require a bit of time and effort for you to really strategically manage your LinkedIn profile. But just as a little toolkit for you to be able to help with reflection on your brand, and from time to time taking in, stopping and seeing whether it's something that energises you, because it does get a little bit, to my word, delicious, when you actually realise that on LinkedIn you're either achieving a goal of socially selling yourself or that you're sort of starting to connect with the right people.
So are there questions that they ask you in each of those categories, or is it based on what you have put in your profile?
It's based on what you put in your profile, and I guess there's an algorithm behind
it.
So it's very, very simple to do.
Yeah.
So I'll plonk all that in the show notes, but again, the website is www.linkedin.com/sales/SSI.
Well, a very good tool, and you know, people have a go with it. It might tell you that you're doing well, or it might tell you you're not, but at least you know then to look at your profile in a different way.
Yeah. And certainly LinkedIn's not for everybody, but no. I think if you sort of recognise that it's a tool to have in your toolkit, it's one to keep an eye on. But thanks, everyone. Talk to you soon.
Bye.